Welcome to Eclectic, the podcast about anything and everything youth ministry. You name it. I'm Rob Brower.
I'm Scott Davis.
So, wow, that's like a... It's almost like there was a comma between Scott and Davis.
Yeah, I kind of forgot my last name for a second.
Scott something or other.
Scott Davis. Davis.
I thought it was a dramatic pause, maybe.
Yeah, it was. That's what it was, exactly. Yeah.
Speaking of dramatic pause, we took a dramatic pause last week when we left off our podcast. We were talking about ministry to millennials.
Yes. Young adult ministry, millennial ministry, whatever you want to call it. They won't like any of the titles you give it.
And we basically asked a couple of tough questions, and we answered them all in depth. So if you haven't listened to last week, pause right now. Go and listen. We'll wait. Okay, you're back. Now, we lied. We didn't answer any of the questions. We just posed a bunch of questions, and we asked questions like, okay, is it really ministry? I mean, are we supposed to minister to millennials?
Is it part of youth ministry?
Or is it its own thing? And if so, does it deserve more attention? And should we and shouldn't we? And I think we agreed on one thing, which was that...
We should
minister to millennials.
Yes. Whether it's its own silo ministry or it's a more integrated into the health, they're a segment of the population that desperately needs to be ministered to whom to be ministered.
A segment of the population
to
whom we should minister not to because if you're an English major, can you help us out? Just email us the right
grammar. If you're part of the grammar police, feel free
to correct
communicate with us.
No, but here's one of the tough things, right? We all agree that not just millennials, but everybody from babies to our senior saints, that we all need to be ministered to. We're all God's people. We're all part of the church universal, right?
Correct.
And so we shouldn't ignore this population segment. But I think what's happening is people aren't sure about this group, this segment. And so I think they're kind of, maybe for lack of a better plan, kind of ignoring them and then going, what do we do? Yeah, they're not coming to church.
Well, I don't think they're even doing that. And maybe some of the leadership, well, I don't know. I don't know how much of that is even going on. In some places, yes, but I think there's unfortunately, a large, massive section of the church of today that just ignores the elephant in the church. Mm-hmm. It's this thing that we just kind of walk past and don't know how to deal with it, so we just don't even talk about it.
Well, I think part of the problem is you know, we've had all of these movements within the modern church. I mean, we had the seeker-sensitive movement, and the pendulum swung that way, and we, you know, watered down the message, and it was all, you know, like a pep talk for 90 minutes and played a bunch of kumbaya, and everybody was happy, but nobody was growing deep. And then, you know, we swing the other way, and we go, no, our church is only about preaching the word, and we're going to go deep, and every time we gather, it's like an in-depth, it's like going to seminary, right? Mm-hmm. And then some people are like, I don't want to have anything do with that. That's not me. And I think there's this middle ground, but no matter how you slice it, I think when it comes to millennials, we talked about this a little bit, we touched on it, but I'd like to dig a little deeper. There's a lot of misconceptions and there's a lot of labels, and if somebody is in their 20s, they may not want to be called a millennial because there's some negativity that comes along with that, such as millennials are spoiled, they're entitled, right? What else have you heard?
Well, they're unreachable. They are corrupt. They've allowed too much of the world's way of thinking into their perspective of faith. Just so many different things.
Yeah.
You know, they're watered down. They're, you know, that Christian millennials have a foot in the world and a foot in the church, mm-hmm. and they're riding the fence. And you know, there's been any
it goes
number of
on
things.
And on and on. And I wonder if, at least on a subconscious level, it's for the church as a whole, it's easier to go, well, let's just ignore them rather than deal with them.
Yeah, we make a lot of excuses about how hard it is to reach them and how we've tried and it's been hard and I've said some of those things too. It's been hard, mm-hmm. but I'm not giving up on it.
But is it easy to reach 13-year-olds? I mean, not particularly.
Is it easy to give a cat a bath?
No.
Yeah.
Don't know where that came from, but
I don't know either because I hate cats.
So here's the crazy thing, right? Last year, a video came out and it went mega viral, and it was this journalist Alexis Boomer, And she came out with this video, not very long, but in it, she criticizes her own generation.
So she's a millennial.
She's a millennial. She
last
comes
name
out.
Boomer.
Boomer. Yep.
Boomer is a millennial.
Well,
I just wanted to focus on the irony.
You got to remember, she got her name from her parents.
I know.
The Boomers had the baby.
The baby
boomer. From the boomer, baby boomer.
So the boomers had the baby boomer.
The baby boomers had baby boomer, whose name is Alexis. I'm tracking.
Boomer.
I'm tracking.
The millennial.
Yeah. And so she gives this video and she drops the mic and it kind of goes boom. And so here, let me quote some of what she says in the video. She says, we're just existing. We're not really contributing anything to society. Wow. That's kind of harsh, right? We listen to really obscene music that degrades women and pretty much glorifies drugs and crime. We use words such as bae to describe someone we love. We're lazy, we're really entitled, and we want to make a lot of money and have free education, but we're not really willing to put in the work. I mean, those are some pretty condemning words for her own generation. And then she goes on to say, we don't respect our elders. We don't even respect our country. We're stepping on our flag instead of stepping up to volunteer. And we mock the men and women that are fighting for us, but we praise the people that are fighting each other. Now, I'm not trying to start a political debate here or anything.
Right.
And so she's really saying, listen, when the older generation criticizes us, rather than turn up our noses and say, you know what? You guys don't know what you're talking about. You're full of it. And so we're not going to be a part of what you're doing, whether it's church or, you know, whatever. We're going to do our own thing. We're better, whatever. She's saying, you know what? They've got a point.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of them. So, you know, those who were out protesting the 1%,
mm-hmm.
And they were doing it with their iPhones. There's so many different things that makes total sense as to what she's saying. There are plenty of exceptions. Now,
absolutely.
We need to make sure it's clear. We are not labeling. We are talking about the labels that are out there and stereotypes that are out there. And they're there because there is some truth to them. But they are not representative of every single person within the millennial category. But there's a lot of truth to it. They'll put a lot more time and energy and effort into protesting their right to do nothing,
mm-hmm.
or protesting their right to be a certain way or whatever, than they will into going and getting a job. Again, they very general, plenty of exceptions.
Yeah. Oh, so, absolutely. And even this video got a bunch of pushback. You know, some saying, look, we just know what we believe in. And when it comes to the protesting the country, you know, stepping on the flag, look, we believe in our rights and we believe in exercising them. And so I get that. And you're right. It's not all millennials. But even in this church, I've seen that from some of the millennials.
Yeah.
And so.
But a lot of churches see that. They see the stuff that's going on in the news. And they see those stereotypes. They see the reasons for it. And to a certain degree, maybe a lot of the stereotypes are created by what is visibly seen by, you know, what maybe actually ends up being a smaller percentage of the population. But still, they are out there. They see the protests and they see the different stereotypes coming to life in various ways. And so then they create in their minds these perceptions about this generation.
Mm-hmm.
And make assumptions about what ministry to them would be like, and so they don't go there.
Okay. I buy that. You know, I wonder though, in the context of church, when it comes to millennials, the statistics aren't incorrect. They're somewhere between, you know, 40-75% of millennials leaving the church. And so there's got to be a reason for it. Now, the reason may not be because they're entitled and they're lazy and blah, blah, blah. There may be another underlying reason. And so I'm curious, why is it so hard to keep the millennial population in the church, do you think?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think a lot of it comes down to... Well, you kind of alluded to it a little bit last week when you were talking about the fact that we have this mentality a lot of times in the church about marketing,
mm-hmm.
and I think they are absolutely a generation that values authenticity, real people, and they can spot the fakers a mile away. They can spot mm-hmm. a salesman the first second he opens his mouth, and they don't want to be sold. They don't want to be marketed. And I think they feel like the church as a whole, and I think they're potentially correct, has worked to market to them, mm-hmm. to attract them as opposed to, you know, really engage.
Part of the thing that why it's difficult is why we're reaching out to them. And if we're marketing to millennials and our only purpose is we want to get millennials in the building because it's a reaction to there are fewer millennials in the building, then that in and of itself kind of becomes a problem. I think we're not handling it the best that we could.
Well, if you look at it culturally, there's this, you know, there's this whole concept of extended adolescence.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because kids get out of high school and they want to be treated like adults, but they want ministry to them to be a continuation of youth group.
Mm-hmm.
Yet at the same time that they want that, it's not satisfying to them. And so it becomes a very difficult way to minister. So part of it becomes the fact that just the simple fact that they're culturally is this extended adolescence,
mm-hmm.
Which is why it's moved the whole young adult thing. Adolescence is essentially becomes this extension, sometimes into the 30s.
Okay.
All these kids living at home and, you know, living off mom and dad and all that kind of stuff. Cause they're never really forced to break out on their own.
Yeah. And you know, and as a youth pastor, I'm willing to own part of this, that maybe we're not doing anybody any favors by not preparing them. And maybe we're not doing it intentionally, but maybe unintentionally, we're pushing them through from children's ministry up into middle school ministry, into high school ministry, and we're going a mile wide and an inch deep, you know? Perhaps in our quest to you know, get more. And we talked about numbers before, and it's difficult because you want to build relationships with your teens, and if you've got a executive pastor or senior pastor that's like, well, what are your numbers, and that's all they're using to measure success, you get kind of caught in the middle, because, man, you know what, success to me might be that I may only have the same 50 kids, but I went way deeper this year with those same 50 kids than I did last year, so it's success, but they're going, you haven't grown. And so sometimes we get stuck. Sometimes we get stuck with having to do the programming to try and get the numbers to appease our bosses.
Yeah.
And by the time a high schooler graduates out of high school ministry, have we really prepared them? Have we really instilled in them the idea that you are a member of this church right now, not in the future,
right?
But you're the church of today, and you need to be serving today.
We do a lot of things to create spiritual extended adolescence, the same way that the world does things to create the extended adolescence, the chronological extended. I don't know what else to tell us to label it. So extended adolescence exists in large part due to the removal during their teenage years or even younger sometimes of expectations and natural consequences of things. And we mm-hmm. fly in to rescue our kids in circumstances, and they never really learn the weight of their decisions. And it stunts, it delays their ability to move out of that adolescent period into adulthood. And we just continually save them, prop them up, move them forward, hold them up and don't force them to stand on their own. And so it's created culturally this extended adolescence. Well, in the church, I think we do a lot of the same thing, especially in their teen years. We minister to them as teenagers. We don't work alongside them in ministry of the church. Mm-hmm. We don't give them the keys to the building to, you know, to talk about. There's a new book that's out called Growing Young from a lot of the Sticky Faith people, Kara Powell. Jake Mulder, and another guy I can't remember off the top of my head, but really good book.
Yeah.
I'm just getting into it. One of the things they talk about is keychain ministry and literally and figuratively handing keys over to teens and giving them responsibility, the ability to step up and fail and permission to fail, and to teach them how to then do it with a little less failure next time, that it's okay. The result of taking on this responsibility is going to mean that sometimes you're not going to do it so good, and that's totally fine, because we all have to learn. But they're stepping up instead of, instead of constantly ministering to them, giving them opportunity to minister to one another or to minister to another segment of the church, and for adults to come alongside them in ministry. By not doing that, we extend their time in this spiritual adolescence because we're not giving them the opportunities they need to grow and develop spiritually and as members of the congregation. And, you know, it makes my skin crawl every time somebody talks about, and I get it, it's well-meaning, it's well-intended, but every time somebody uses that term, oh, they're the church of tomorrow, I just want to stand up and scream, no, they are the church of today.
Yeah.
Quit looking at them as something for tomorrow, that like they're a savings account for us for a rainy day. They are in the church now. They can minister. They can love. They can learn the love of Christ. They can represent the love of Christ. They can do these things. And we need to allow them to begin to do that, or they never grow beyond that place.
No, I would agree with you. You know, it's kind of funny because they're the one segment, the one age group that we kind of set aside and we say, I mean, like there's children's ministry and there's middle school and high school ministry, but after high school, we just kind of lump everybody together, but we kind of just acknowledge that, okay, there's this whole group that disappears. And what we're seeing is the trend is that they disappear as a millennial, they get married, they start a family, and they get to a point where they're like, oh my gosh, we've got these kids, what do we do with these kids? Let's get them in church. And then they wind up coming back to the church, you know, post-millennialism, you know, when they're closer our age. And we're seeing this resurgence of, you know, this growth in that age group of people that young families are coming back to church now. But in the meantime, I think the question is, how do we minister to millennials to help them avoid that gap, to avoid that heartache? How do we get them to not leave the church as a whole? And not just for our number's sake, but because our heart really has to be for God's people. And that includes the millennials, right? And so how do we let somebody know from an early age that God loves them, and that they're a part of this church family, this community, and we're here for them, and we continue to reinforce that through middle school and high school and get them serving even at that early of an age, so that when they are a legal adult at the age of 18, they know that they're a member of this church. Yeah. They don't have to transition into the adult service and, you know, move from the, you know, the kids table at Thanksgiving dinner to the adult table, right? You know? Do we make a big deal out of it? Do we have a ceremony? What's it going to take? I mentioned earlier that I spent some time at this conference Monday and Tuesday, and the guest speaker that they brought in, Rick Dunn, he's actually the lead pastor of a large church, but he had some real interesting ideas about millennials. And there's an article that I read, I shared with you, from Christianity Today, and they call him the Millennial Man. And we don't have enough time in this episode to get into it, so let's come back next week and let's talk a little bit about that. He's got some great ideas on how to minister to millennials by, get this, not ministering to millennials.
Yeah. I think in the meantime, something for all of us to spend a little time kind of maybe in prep for that conversation is to just kind of be, look at our own churches and look at it honestly, what has been done in the past for the millennials in our church, what is currently being done or what's currently not being done. And just, you know, maybe, you know, pray that God would open our hearts and our eyes and our minds to see things the way he sees them. And to see the people the way that he sees them, where we would look at them maybe with the stereotype of entitled and spoiled and whatever, that maybe we need to God's help to set those stereotypes aside and see them the way he sees them, as people who are in desperate need of the gospel of Jesus Christ in their lives.
Just
to
like
to have saving relationships.
Just like
with
the
Jesus.
Rest of the age groups.
Yes.
Right? And so, yeah, it seems like it's borderline, or maybe it is actually, it's exactly kind of an age discrimination thing that we're doing with these millennials.
Yeah.
And if I were being discriminated against that way, maybe I wouldn't want to be a part of the church either. So,
I think the obvious answer in what we can do to prevent the exodus in the future is be more strategic and intentional with them during their teen years. But for what we're talking about with this podcast and this series right now is how to specifically reach them. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking forward to the continued discussion.
Yeah, me too. In the meantime, we'd love for you to join the discussion. You can go ahead and jump on our website. It's eclectic.com. That's eklectic. You can hit us up on Twitter. We are at eclectic. Once again, eklectic. You can email us podcast@eclectic.com, or you can hit us up on Facebook. We are at facebook.com/IamEclectic. Thanks for listening. I'm Rob.
I'm Scott.
Stay eclectic.
I love that candle.
The candle of ambiance. It's some sort of a treasure. It's found deep in a cave.
It smells like... Is this scented? Excuse me, is this scented?
It's the smell of every other nose that's pressed up against it since the beginning of time.
Oh, have a lot of people done this? So,
more than you think.
Are we mixing snot?
You know, and if I touch my nose with that, and you touch your nose with that, it's kind of the same as us just touching the tips of our nose together.
That's a little creepy.
It's kind of the same thing.
Let's stop. Watermelon, foosh, 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 foosh.
He thrusts his fists against the post and still insists he sees a ghost. That's a real theater warm-up, by the way.
My life is a theatre.